You're listening to Cattails.
Hi, and welcome to another edition of Cattails. With over 100 million albums, 4 Grammys, 3 Brits, an Ivor Novello Award and an induction into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, John Ilsley has done it all. Playing a pivotal role in the success of Dire Straits, John has been credited with the creation of the band's original sound and is the only member, other than Mark Knopfler, to make it all the way from the first album in 1977 to the final concert in 1992. With the band a little more than a memory, John has released numerous solo albums, has a tour where he reveals all about his time in Dire Straits, and spends his relaxation time producing excellent pieces of art. This is the one with John Ilsley. Welcome to the show. And so how are you getting on? Just tell me a little bit about what you're doing.
Well, ironically, I live in the country, and which is quite an isolated part of the world, in the New Forest. We haven't got many people around us. So, I mean, I spend quite a bit of time already in an isolated sort of world. We have the children with us at the moment, which is very different. But, you know, I have a studio here. I have my painting studio here. And so, I mean, I work from home. I always have worked from home.
Yeah.
So until I go to a studio and try and make some sense of what I've done at home.
Yeah. So business as usual for you at the moment then, isn't it, in a way?
Pretty much. I mean, I'm missing the obvious contact with, you know, friends and stuff. But most of my family lives quite close to us here. So we have that advantage, but it is quite odd just having conversations with your friends on the phone or FaceTiming people and keeping that distance apart. It all feels a little odd.
It does, doesn't it?
Yeah, and but you know, it's not forever. We'll look back on this and go, oh my God, do you remember that? Well, that was so weird.
Yes.
I mean, it's a brave new world right now, or a strange new world.
Yeah, it is. And it'll be interesting to see what comes out off the back of it, won't it? But I guess it's a whole new album's worth of material could be for you.
Well, the thing is, I have been working on something this morning because my son, Harry, who's 23, is quite good at handling all the new technology with recording technology. So he brought all his kit down from London before the lockdown and set up actually in my studio in the house. And so we every day we do a little bit of work in there, very different from the sort of music he does. Mine's more, I hate to use the word old school, but more traditional kind of approach to making music, whereas his music is quite electronic. But quite interesting having his ideas come into what I'm doing at the moment. So you never know. There's a few things sort of emerging, if you like, gradually out of the rather sort of muddy brain cells.
Yes. Yeah, it's hard to keep yourself sort of going, isn't it, really, with sort of some inspiration during this kind of time, because it's a bit sort of, as you say, a bit surreal, isn't it? But I was going to throw a little fact for you. You'll probably, oh no, you won't know this, because I'm sure you don't watch the calendar to this extent, but actually today is the day, 35 years ago, that you released Money for Nothing. So today's the day.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's actually today. So I thought, well, goodness me, it's the 35th anniversary of that album.
Okay, so it's nice to have an anniversary suddenly.
Yes, it is.
Well, sprung upon you from outside.
Yeah, well, there you go. A bit of celebration for you tonight then, isn't it?
But well, we are.
Can you remember that day? This is the thing. 35 years ago seems a long time ago, but when it's something as important as the first album that was certified 10 times platinum, it's a bit special, isn't it?
Yes, it was a odd time, really. I mean, you know, the band had achieved a certain amount of success before Brothers in Arms, Brothers in Arms, but you never really know what's going to happen in this world, you know, with music, because some things capture people's imagination and other things which you think are probably quite good don't. So I think that we would slightly taken by surprise by the attention that the album got, but I suppose the fact that it was coupled up with this new technology, the CD technology, that was being pushed pretty hard as the only way to listen to music, if you remember rightly.
Yeah.
the indestructible CD, which of course we found out later wasn't.
Yes, exactly.
But you know, the Money for Nothing thing was, it was a sort of a coupling of things because MTV had come out, and it all just seemed to sort of all fit together in some sort of synchronistic way.
Mm.
To take a police word. So it was fortuitous, I suppose, that some of these things come together in life, and I suppose something will come together out of all this. I mean, goodness knows what.
Yes.
But hopefully the world will learn something.
Well, absolutely. Well, we learn things along the way, and you can't stop progress, can you, really? Because now you've got music is all now downloaded, which is, again, it's even moved on from the CD, which now seems, as you say, a lifetime ago. And, of course, before that, vinyl, although vinyl's having a bit of a resurgence, isn't it?
Well, a little bit.
Yeah.
Percentage-wise, it's still very, very small. But it's nice. It's nice to see... You know, it's nice to see it coming back because there's something really quite solid about that vinyl experience, actually.
Yeah.
And it's nice that the younger members of the, you know, musical sort of listening public are getting into them again and collecting them and going into record shops and leafing their way through all this old cardboard.
Yes, exactly. But there's something beautiful about that tangibility of it, you know. And, you know, I remember holding my albums, you know, and you just look at them and you read the, you know, the sleeves over and over again, didn't you, while you're listening to the music. And it was an experience rather than just simply listening to the music experience, you know, if you understand where I'm going with that. Yeah, so I'm going to ask you a strange question here because I've got a favourite Dire Straits album, like I'm sure everybody has. And I'm just going to ask what yours was. Have you got one? Can you choose?
Well, I don't really. I because that would be sort of saying, well, that's I prefer that to that, and everyone had its own place in our journey, really. I don't see. I mean, if you took the sort of just the sales of albums, then that would be a different kind of thing. But I'm very fond of all of them, to be perfectly honest. For different reasons.
Yes.
Where they were made, how they were made, who we made them with, you know, what songs were on them, what songs were important at that particular time. I mean, you take Brothers in Arms off the album of the same name, and you know, I think that's a song that'll stand the test of time. But everybody looks at Sultans to be the sort of definitive Dire Straits sound, if you like, because it was that was the sound of the band in the early days. So they all have a different sort of moment. And as Mark's writing developed, the music changed.
Mm.
And so we had different material to deal with. It wasn't the same thing. You know, sometimes when you listen to a band, it sounds like the last record and the record before that and the record before that. I think the band, although we had a distinctive style, managed to produce quite different albums every time, but obviously with that distinctive, you know, Dire Straits sound to it. But you know, because it's really about the songs, and it's the songs that, in a sense, I keep saying to anybody who asks me, well, you know, how come, you know, the band was successful, and what, you know, what's the secret and all the rest of it? Well, there are no secrets apart from the fact if you write a good song and you play it well, people are going to listen to it.
Yeah.
It's very difficult to write a good song, you know. Mm. Everybody says, you know, well, pop songs, you know, they're two a penny. Well, it's actually quite difficult to write a good pop song.
Absolutely, yeah.
You know, I mean, we never did write pop songs, but, you know, to write a good song that's going to stand the test of time, if that's what you want to do, it's not easy.
No, absolutely.
It's a lot of hard work involved in it.
Yes, it seems a glamorous life from the outside, but it's certainly not. It is work, isn't it? And I think that's the thing that people forget.
Yeah, but it's, you know, you can't really call it work. when you're doing something that you absolutely adore, even though it's tough, it's a bit like painting. I do that as well. And, you know, I go and have my, when we can, a life drawing classes with this rather lovely lady called Maggie Hamblin, who's a bit of an English icon now. We do life drawing classes on a Thursday. And, you know, I'm struggling with something, you know, and she looks at me and she says, it's not supposed to be Easy, Ilsley. What do you want? A walk in the park? It's the most difficult thing to do, this art, which is the reason why we do it. And then walks away.
And that's true, though, isn't it? Because actually, if it was easy, everybody would be doing it, and there would be no awe when you actually look at that piece of finished work or listen to that piece of finished work, would
there? Yeah. But I mean, the thing is, Kat, we all feed off each other. And, you know, I feed off other people's music. I feed off other people's paintings. And, you know, there's nourishment to me. You know, it's actually sort of food, food for thought, food for music, food for art. So, and it's a wonderful thing to be able to engage with. And, you know, but it is a lot of hard work. I mean, sometimes I go into the painting studio and I'm in there for the whole morning and I come out and I go, well, that was a complete bloody waste of time. And, turn my back on it. And the next day I go in and go, actually, it's not as bad as I thought it was.
Yes.
Or maybe it is. And start again.
Sounds like you're your own worst critic, though.
Well, if you don't like it, then you can't really put it in front of somebody else and say, what do you think?
That's true. That is true, isn't it? You have got to. It starts with self-love, doesn't it, somewhere along the line?
No, but life does.
Yes, it does.
Life is about self-love. If you don't love yourself, how can you love anybody else?
Well, this is right. I think that's a lesson that a lot of people don't really learn until quite later in life, do they? You know, you've got to get to middle age before you think, well, hold on a second. I've got to sort myself out, fix myself first.
Yeah,
and then
hopefully
it all falls into place somewhere along the line. But
if you don't like yourself, you've got to find out why.
Yes, that's right. That's a good
that makes
point,
sense.
Yeah.
I know it's an easy thing to say, but...
And sometimes that's hard, isn't it? Shining the spotlight on yourself and being really honest and going, well, do you know what? It's that and I need to fix it. But you know, it's how do you fix it? It's the problem, isn't it, really?
Well, there are people out there that can help you.
Yes, exactly.
If you get really difficult, or a good friend can often say, well, actually, maybe you should stop doing that.
Yeah, yes. You know? Yeah, yeah.
Or you know, whatever.
And sometimes it's what you don't even realise you're doing, isn't it? So
we
all need friends, and which we're all missing at the moment, aren't we? And we all need a little bit of therapy of some description along the way. And lots of people, music is their therapy as well, isn't it? So, you know, how does that feel for you, where you know that you've got an important role to play, I guess, in society? Does that feel, it's not responsibility for you, but does it feel like a bit of an honour, or tell me?
I don't really think about it in that kind of way. I mean, I think it's just a bonus if somebody likes what you do. I've never felt any sense of responsibility about it, or I mean, it is just basically what one does, and you know, a lot of the stuff that one engages with is not worth listening to for even a second, but. You know, occasionally something comes out, and if somebody else comes back to you and says, you know, oh, I mean, I got an email this morning from somebody in Spain who said, I've just discovered your second album, Glass, which was 1988, right there. That was, what's that, 32 years ago.
Wow.
And he said, oh my God, he said, I absolutely love that song, Red Turns to Blue. And it made me, I went, oh my God, that's 32 years ago. And he said, I just play it every day. And I go, oh, right, okay. So I wrote back to him and said, well, I'm really touched. You know, that's all I can say. I'm really touched that you got it, you know.
Yes. And that's what you really want to do, isn't it, is to speak to people with your music and actually connect.
Communicate.
Yeah.
It's about communicating.
Yeah, sure.
You know.
Yeah.
You know, either with... You know, there's lots of ways of communicating. Obviously, this is the obvious one, which we're doing, but there's something else about the power of music and the power of art, which actually, you know, poetry or theatre, you know, you just get something else from it. You get, you build up a bigger sense of humanity,
I think. Yeah, I get that. You know, it's almost like another dimension, isn't it?
Yeah.
Takes you on a journey.
Oh. It is, and it's, you know, there's something very, very collective about when you do gigs and things and you've got all those people coming together for the same reason. I mean, you know, there's a lot of power in that. A lot of power in that. And it's a privilege, actually. A privilege to have been engaged in that kind of activity. And especially when things were on a high, you know, when the band was having a big time. Getting that feedback from an audience was humbling, actually, remarkably sort of powerfully humbling.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's a special thing, isn't it, really? And you said there about when you were like almost at the height there with Dire Straits, where you had like, you know, stadiums full of people.
Yeah.
Did you feel at that stage that there was nowhere else to go to continue to get that feeling of momentum? You know, because it must, does it become second nature going out and, you know, yes, it's humbling getting what, you know, the feedback, but where does it go from there?
Well, I never really took it for granted, you know. I think the one thing about the band, which Mark and I were kind of quite together on this, is that we wanted to make those shows that we did good every night, you know, not just okay, you know. So there was a lot of pressure on all of us to actually make that happen. But I think that in a sense, you did get used to the size of these places and the amount of people there. And, you know, in the initial stages, it does feel kind of like, oh, my God, you know, there's 70,000 people out there.
Yeah.
What the, you know.
Yeah.
And then, you know, and then you take yourself back to when you played in the club in Wolverhampton to five people.
Yeah.
You know, and two of them had a fight and things like that. And then you think, what a ridiculous world we live in. You've gone from there to there.
Yeah.
And both seemed normal at the time. You know?
Yeah.
But, of course, the latter one was extraordinary. And I think that we basically mutually decided that we'd probably taken the Straits as an idea, pretty much as far as we could. And I knew Mark was desperate to do different kind of things and completely appreciated that. He was writing differently. He wanted to get involved in all sorts of other stuff. And so he didn't really need a vehicle like Dire Straits to do it in. And, you know, it was a very good time for us to say, you know, 1992, which is actually 28 years.
Oh, no.
No, it's 30, 28 years ago, is it?
A long
no,
time.
No, 1992. That's 28, I think.
One thing's for sure, we're not very good at maths, are we?
Well, I used to be until I started talking to you.
But, oh, sorry.
That we stopped 28 years ago performing together, and it was extraordinary, really.
Amazing, isn't it? Amazing.
But, the right time to do it, though.
I would love to play one of your tracks. Have you got a particular one that you would like?
I think, actually, I quite like Old Amsterdam, which is off the Coming Up for Air album, really written with... the very first time that the band went to Amsterdam and played in the Paradiso in 1978, I was reflecting on that early excitement of that time, and also being in Amsterdam, which I think is one of the most beautiful cities, and I visit it regularly. So it's a song about Amsterdam, really, and the first time that the band went over there.
Houses and a roll of the hand. a feast for the eyes. Golden moments no one could deny. Old Amsterdam.
Hello, I'm John Ilsley and you're listening to Cat Tales.
And since then, of course, you've had so many other projects that you've worked on with your solo albums. You've actually, I think, almost produced more solo albums now than you did when you were in Dire Straits, haven't you?
Yeah, well, every couple of years I get something together. It takes me a bit longer because you're working on your own, but I've got a lovely bunch of musicians that I use to help me put these things together when I've got some rough drafts. And so, yeah, I mean, every couple of years I put something out. I don't know, I think we're up to number two. I'm working, I think there'd be the seventh or eighth, I can't remember now. I'd have to look in the cupboard and see. I can never remember how many albums I've done. It's crazy, really.
I know exactly what you mean, though. It's almost like when you're working on that particular project or that album at the time, that's the most important thing, isn't it?
And yeah.
It sounds to me like once you finish that project, it's almost like that's the end of that relationship with it, in a way, isn't it?
That's true. Mm, yeah.
I get that.
And then you've got to decide, if you go out and play the music, you know, what to choose from, because you've got sort of 60 or 70 songs to choose from of your own, let alone all the Dire Straits stuff.
I know. I was going to ask, how do you do that? I mean, that's just...
It's very difficult. Mm. Really. And Mark's got an even bigger problem, because he's done God knows how many solo albums. And, you know, so, you know, putting a two-hour show together, you've got to drop a few things.
You have. And I bet there's always someone in the audience who wants something that you haven't played.
Of course. So, yeah, well, I mean, you know, they, in some ways... You know, they're the obvious things that people want to hear. Mm. And, you know, so in a way, you know, one tries to oblige that kind of situation. But, you know, sometimes you think, oh, do I really want to play that? That will be 1,500 times I've played that song.
Yes.
You know. Okay, one more time.
Yeah, just one more.
Yeah.
But it's a shame your tour's been cancelled because of all this situation, because you've actually got a lot of dates booked in, didn't you? And that's a different kind of format you were doing there. Is it by right in saying that you're doing some, not Q&As, but telling the life story of yourself and where you...
Well, it wasn't really... It would have been about 10 hours long if I'd done that, but it was just trying to pick out some of the highlights and the nuances of the band, about, you know, how it was when it started, how we started. So I called it The Life and Times of Dire Straits, which essentially was really from the beginning to the end. So we in the course of the evening, we play music from all the different albums, and I play some of my stuff as well, some of my material. But I speak to one of my ex-managers for 15, 20 minutes before we play the music, and we take a break. And so it gives the people a flavour of what it was like, how it started, you know, the situations we found ourselves in from time to time, which some of them were quite amusing, some of them were quite weird. And generally speaking, it's gone down extremely well. And yeah, we've actually rescheduled the dates till next March. God knows whether we'll be able to do them then.
Well, let's think. I don't know. Crikey.
I don't know.
Hopefully we'll be out of this situation by then. But, you know, if people can't see it, they can always buy your DVD, because you've got a DVD, haven't you, as well, on sale?
Yes, and I'm thinking of trying to get it all online somehow or other at some point, but so that people can actually watch it online.
Yes, yeah.
The DVD's actually has been very popular, you know, and it's... What I did with it, I didn't take the band with me, I just took three other musicians, keyboards and guitar, a couple of other guitars, and so we play the songs acoustically.
Yeah.
So we've taken the original songs and we've broken them down into more simple ways of doing them, and actually it's been really, really enjoyable doing that. So you relive the song again, but in a different way.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and it gives
been
a different
great.
Feel.
It's been really good.
So hopefully March you'll be back on the road with it all.
March, we've
well.
Got the dates settled now. We've taken some... I hope we don't have to cancel it again. I mean, my problem is, of course, is that the average age in my shows these days is over 50. So, I mean, or maybe even over 60, the average age.
Yeah. So they're all self-isolating at the moment.
Well, but exactly. So, I mean, whether there'll be different rules for different ages, I don't know.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting.
Could be.
Well, yeah. We'll see, won't we? So, what's the next album that you're working on? You're working on one now, aren't you? But you've just released one back in October, November, was it last year?
Yeah, coming up for air. We released it last year, yeah.
Yeah. And what I was going to say there was, do you feel that the results are that you're getting now in terms of like 9 or whatever albums it is down the road are the same as what you were doing to start with? I mean, I've listened to a couple and there's a certain progression in there in terms of style, obviously. Do you tend to write about what is happening in your life now, so therefore this one coming up is very different from the one before?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're sort of little... some of them are stories, some of them are just ideas about feelings and just general sort of thoughts about what's going on in one's life at the time. It is a bit of a puzzlement. I mean, I think you'll find this when you talk to anybody who writes songs and music or poetry or whatever. Sometimes things drop into your lap and sometimes you have to work very hard at finishing something off. Mm. It doesn't always just go straight onto the paper or straight onto the fretboard, you know. Mm. Sometimes it is like a massive jigsaw puzzle. I jot down ideas in my various books that I've got, things I want that I'm interested in, and I might be playing the guitar. I mean, if I get up and walk the dogs in the morning, I'll sit down in the kitchen for half an hour and play the guitar with a cup of tea, and
Lovely.
Then I suddenly get an idea for something I wrote yesterday. And there's no pattern to it, really.
Sounds like you can't put that guitar down.
Well, they're friends, aren't they?
Yes, that's right.
I mean, anybody who plays a guitar a lot will tell you that they become part of your friendship group.
Yeah.
You know, and it, when you've got it in your hands, it sort of like just feels cosy.
Yeah, and and it's a nice little protection as well, isn't it? It's part of you.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, absolutely. Well, I don't write things on the bass. I tend not to. I tend to write things on the guitar or the piano. You know,
brilliant.
So I have enough things to challenge me, if you like, to you know, to work at,
to keep you occupied at the moment.
I've got lots to keep me occupied. Indeed, I do.
If you had one thing that hasn't been fulfilled yet in your life, whether it be, I don't know, appearing in pantomime or writing a book or whatever, you know, what have you got left that is a big ambition of yours?
I might write a book. I might. I've been thinking about it, but we'll see.
Mm.
It's a big challenge because I'm not really a book writer. I'm a reader. You know, I like reading books, but, you know, I don't know. I'd like to get another art exhibition together by the end of, not this year, but probably early next year, mm-hmm. when people can actually go out and look at the pictures.
Yeah.
I'd like to get this album out maybe later this year or early next year. You know, I've had my share, I think, of things in this life so far. So I'm not exactly panting for anything else. You know, I've had my fair share of everything, pretty much, and so I'm not really looking for anything that's out of the ordinary. I'm afraid I can't really pull anything out of the bag. But
no,
I mean,
that's fine.
A book might be interesting. You know.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely fine. Oh, do you know, it's been so lovely speaking to you.
Lovely.
You
nice
take
to
care,
talk to you, love.
And you. Okay. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye.
You've been listening to Cat Tales. To listen again to this and other tales, go to cattales.co.uk.